Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Each year, seniors and their families lose billions of dollars to scam artists. Estimates of the total amount swindled from seniors each year range anywhere from $3 to $36 billion. The full extent of the fraud is difficult to determine because elder financial abuse is vastly underreported. We do know, however, that the number of reported cases is going up, as is the number of people hitting retirement age. So the problem isn't likely to go away anytime soon. So tonight we ask, how can seniors and their families protect themselves? Joining me here in the studio to discuss these issues is Cheryl Poncini, Deputy District Attorney for Alameda County's Elder Dependent Adult Protection Unit. She is a frequent presenter in the Bay Area on the topic of elder fraud and what seniors can do to protect themselves against the most common types of fraud and financial elder abuse. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you for having me on.
Also joining me here in the studio is Prescott Cole. He is has been a staff attorney at CANR, and that stands for California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, for the past 19 years, where he counsels consumers and family members who have questions about elder law. He has testified before the United States Senate Special Committee on Aging about financial abuse and drafted a number of successful pieces of California legislation to protect seniors from fraud and financial abuse. He is the recipient of numerous awards for his work, and in 2013, Governor Jerry Brown appointed Prescott to the Professional Fiduciaries Advisory Committee. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And finally, by phone, we're joined by Shauna Reeves. She's Director of Elder Abuse Prevention at the Institute on Aging here in San Francisco. Previously, she was Director of Financial Education and Advocacy at the Council on Aging in Silicon Valley. Shauna has published numerous articles on elder financial abuse and has presented throughout the country on consumer issues and innovative ways to prevent elder abuse. Welcome, Shauna.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, we welcome you, our listeners, as always, to join the conversation. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes or so. I'll give you that phone number now. It's 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you could post a comment at the KALW website or tweet us at CityVisionsKALW. So Prescott Cole of CANR, also known as the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, I wanted to start with you by getting some background information. First of all, tell us a little bit more, break down for us what we mean when we talk about elder financial abuse. I imagine there's multiple different types.
There's a lot of different types. And the two major areas that you might want to think about are the family or the next-door neighbors, caregivers, small crimes of opportunity that involve sums of money that's probably less than $10,000, or family disputes that are involving what they perceive to be their inheritance. Then there's the other area, which is the commercial serial predators. These are the people who are the professionals that make their living targeting seniors. And for what it's worth, the best kinds of targets have to be the seniors. If you're a predator, I mean, you have a person or a whole section of individuals that are facing end-of-life situations, major fears about losing their mental capacity. They're reticent to come forward for fear of actually being conserved. So those are two general areas, the commercial serial predators and the other crimes of opportunity.
So when you say the commercial serial predators, you mean those people who make it their job and interest to defraud people out of their funds?
Yes, and they
serial con artists, scam artists, as we would otherwise call them?
Yeah, more on the professional level, that are actually using legitimate products, targeting seniors, selling unsuitable financial instruments. Classically, it would be a deferred annuity, which is a great product for somebody who's 20, 30 years of age. Let's say they're a baseball player that makes $8 million a year, $30 million in the bank, and even with their drug habit, they can't spend all $8 million, making a joke. But the point is, if you have money in the bank that's sitting there and you can't spend your income, it's a good idea to put some of it away. And a deferred annuity is making interest, and then 30, 40 years from now, the money comes out, and then you pay your taxes then. It's a good idea. It's part of your overall estate plan. However, if you're 80 years of age and buy a 20, 30-year deferred annuity, you have two chances on that, zero and none. In fact, we had a case that came through our organization where we had a 93-year-old farmer who put $650,000 into an annuity that matures in the year 2063. The agent made $74,000 worth of interest for less than 4 hours worth of work, because these products pay commission. And they pay big commission because the institution that gets the money knows it'll have that money to do whatever they're doing with that money for 20, 30, 40 years. So that's the kind of thing. And then also we see problems with reverse mortgages being pushed to get the money out, get the equity out to buy some kind of a product or something else, or even, you know, send the money up to Canada for playing the lotto, the Canadian
lotto. So these are otherwise, what would you say, legitimate financial instruments that, when applied to the setting of a senior, are totally fraudulent?
Yes, and
they can be fraudulent.
Yes, we have some good law that if you're looking at suitability, then the district attorneys can come in, and also civil litigators.
Say more there, Cheryl Ponsini from Alameda County, Assistant District Attorney.
Well, we have in our consumer fraud division, we have a real estate unit. So we do have people who are very well versed in reverse mortgage scams. Again, these can be very legitimate instruments, but people have to do the research. They have to do their homework. And people can be taken. They may not realize that once the primary borrower dies, that the rest of the family may have to leave the home because the holder of that loan, that reverse mortgage, can sell the home. So I just do disagree with something that Prescott said.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And what I disagree with is I think there's more of a division in terms of the kinds of frauds that happen. I know Prescott deals a lot with annuities fraud and with the so-called legitimate financial instruments that can be used adversely against a senior. But make no mistake, family members and your average ordinary con artists are rampant out there. And they can basically strip an elder of virtually everything that elder has worked for their entire life. And it can be thousands and thousands of dollars.
Oh, I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah. So you probably have three classifications. You have the so-called trusted caregiver, the neighbor, the trusted advisor, the family member. You have the stranger, and then you have somebody who works within a business setting. And right, is selling products to a senior, and the senior really should not be purchasing that product because it's not in the senior's best interest.
Okay, so that's a great way of conceptualizing the different types of exploitation, financial exploitation. So I wanted to bring in Shauna Reeves from the Institute on Aging here in San Francisco. Tell us, Prescott said just a few minutes ago that, you know, the best targets, so to speak, in this scenario or in these scenarios are elders. Tell us, Shauna, from your understanding of aging and the aging population, why is that?
I'd say the number one reason is that elders in this country have 70% of the wealth. Those over 70 or over 60 in this country have over 70% of the wealth, and that translates to $15 trillion in equity. So they are targets for their wealth. I think that's the most basic reason, the most obvious reason. Elders are also facing new needs as they age. They might not be as mobile as they used to be. They might need upgrades to their home, and they're not sure where to go for those sorts of services. They might need more money if they're in between the age of 60 and 65. That area where Medicare has yet to kick in, and they might need some more money, and they don't know where to go, they might think about taking out a reverse mortgage at that age, since they qualify at age 62. So all these new needs and not sure where to go, not sure where to check to make sure that they're working with legitimate professionals. There are changes in the brain that also occur, and Prescott can speak more to this, that happen after age 50 that can make elders more vulnerable to professionals and what they have to say about products. But I would really just focus most on the tactics of the predators. They are the ones that are so good that elders just really don't have a chance A lot of focus gets put on education and how we need to educate seniors so they don't fall victim, but I think this can become a sophisticated form of victim blaming when we put the onus all on the senior, and we think the education will get us out of this mess, because it just won't.
So that's a very interesting point, and I want to get back to it. But I did want to talk about the aging brain, Prescott, that Shauna set up for you there. What is it about the brain after age 50, as she puts it, that removes the protections that would a younger person might otherwise have in place to be able to really read a situation in a better way?
Yeah, understood. There's some great science that's starting to really look at the brain. A lot of good brain studies. A phenomenal study came out in 2007 called the Orbital Cortex, the Real Life Decision Making, Normal Aging, out of the University of Iowa. And what they did was they took a cohort of seniors that had no indication that they might have had some kind of mental incapacity, or it was starting to look like they were having some form of dementia. They were just, you know, older, and they presented very well. They found through looking at this special thing that they did with them, they had to perform certain functions, and they worked out this program. And in the end of it, they found that 35-40% of the seniors were making decisions the same way people with traumatic brain injury make decision, reward repetition. Apparently, the orbital cortex, which is the front part of the brain where you do your executory function, incidentally, that's the last part of the brain to really develop. That's why we don't classically charge children as adults, because they can't really form intent yet. And sadly, it's the first part of the brain that really starts to go, not with every senior, but with a large a portion of seniors. As that starts to lose its dominance, then the brain does what the brain's supposed to do. It continues to make decisions, but it's using an older part of the brain, the reptile part of the brain, where you have information stored, and they call it the truth effect. So what happens is, if you have information that's there, you'll respond. That's why classically you see all these ads for seniors from the scam artists that have American flags, military symbols, things that they're familiar with. And like we talked about reverse mortgages, there's a reason why when they're selling reverse mortgages, they're using older celebrities. It's not because they're cheaper. It's because, you know, they have that affinity.
It's an emotional response.
Emotional, but just seeing people they're familiar with. I mean, they're using people like Pat Boone and all these different characters, but my favorite is Henry Winkler. Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz, he's never played a legitimate character. I mean, these are characters, but he is pitching reverse mortgages. Seniors see him, and they're familiar with those faces. And that's what's going on. They also do studies where they show they can actually measure a senior's or people's financial capacity to understand financial transactions. And every year, after 60, you lose a point, you lose a point. And at the same time, that study also shows that you have financial confidence, which remains flat. You can show them that they're losing their ability, but they still have their confidence. Now, you know, the people who are selling products, that's what they're using. And Shauna mentioned some of these techniques. They use fear, they use anger, they use greed. They get people worked up. Seniors classically have a fear of going to nursing homes and outliving their assets. So they'll hammer them with, you know, they'll make up stats, say 50% of all seniors will go into the nursing home. Average stay is 2.5 years. But, you know, we have 110 nursing home beds in California. We have 4 million seniors, and you think the jails are crowded. So we don't have that many seniors in nursing homes.
And did you actually say 110 beds, or did you mean
110,000
beds? Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And one thing about nursing homes, it's transitory. Of the people that go in, 70% are discharged by 90 days. And by 1 year, there's only 12% of the people that go in will still be in nursing homes. So they use that for they get the seniors upset. And then they get them angry. They'll say the government has programs. They're giving the money to illegal aliens now. They're giving the money to drug addicts. It's your money. And then greed, they say, listen to me for the next 15 minutes, 30 minutes. I can guarantee I can get you onto a program that will get you the same kind of care Ronald Reagan got to the last year of his life.
But those tactics
Cheryl
are
Puncini.
Also used by regular con artists. the ones who are out there maybe working with their confederates, but who are not part of a reverse mortgage scam or an annuity scam. The ones who come to the front door claiming to have leftover products to re-roof your house. And they can do that whole roof for $3,000 because they don't want to have to load all that material back to the shop. And your neighbor around the corner just had the roof put on by them. So elders, and by the way, we should define who an elder is in California under California law. And under California law, it's anyone who's 65 years of age and older. It's not 62. It's not 55.
Not in this state.
Not in this state. It may be in some other state, but not here. Seniors also want to trust people.
I want to go back to that definition. And does disability status have anything to do with changing the age or anything like that?
If you are a disabled adult, dependent adult, under Penal Code Section 368, that law, which is the Elder Abuse and Dependent Adult Abuse Law, protects both dependent as well as elders. So a dependent is defined as a person who's 18, between the ages of 18 and 64, who has a physical and or mental disability that prevents them from taking care of their daily needs, such as feeding themselves, dressing, working. And it also can apply to anybody who's admitted to a 24/7 hospital. So if you're out playing football and you break your leg and you're 25 years old and you wind up in a local hospital for 3 days because you have to have surgery to repair the leg, you are, under California law, a dependent adult.
But if those circumstances don't apply to you, there's a big gap between 50 and 65,
that's right?
Right?
Exactly.
Which is where you said the brain starts to change.
Right. And that,
so go ahead, Cheryl. You were saying, well, going to say more there.
So I wanted just to point out that seniors do tend to trust people. And a lot of seniors that I've encountered, because I do a lot of outreach programs in Alameda County in the community about scams and so on, a lot of seniors feel that they don't need to hear any information because in their minds they didn't get to fill in the blank, whatever age they may be, by getting taken. And one of the big losses that happens when somebody is defrauded is not only the loss of money and or property, it is the loss of self-esteem, because they realize, I thought I was above this. I thought I could protect myself. I thought I could protect my wife or my spouse and know a fraudster when I saw a fraudster. Mm-hmm. But this fraudster just took me hook, line, and sinker. So that's something that is very important. And it also can help contribute to somebody's ultimate demise when if they don't come out of that downward spiral of self-loathing or self not respecting oneself.
Hmm. Shauna Reeves, I wanted to ask you, what are some other ways that we can think about the demographics here in terms of people who are most at risk? And I know you want us to think more broadly or put the due emphasis on the predators, as it were, rather than the targets here, which are elders. But who do you think are at most risk?
Yeah, easiest answer, we're all at risk, all of us, and elders even more so because of that wealth issue I talked about before. Mm-hmm. Some of the new research has been quite interesting. There's a new study from a financial services company in San Francisco called TrueLink that talked about how former studies saying that, forgive me, there's a police car in the background there, that the typical victim profile is a woman over the age of 85, very isolated, and possibly a recent widow. But when we start looking at financial abuse involving investment scams, the picture changes. And so there was also some research out of Stanford saying it's actually men between the ages of 50 and 60 with some college education and a higher income than average who are more likely to fall victim for investment scams. So I think we're going to have to look at the ways that we're doing our outreach on these issues, this focus on older women over 85, but I think we need to start looking at the younger folks and the men as well. And I also think that this is just a time for us to say enough. We need more research in this area because the research we do have is quite inadequate and the need is so great. But it is, when we look at the investment scams, it's starting to look like the picture is different than what we thought.
Do we know anything about, and I'll put this out to any of you, do we know anything about how, you know, the ability for organizations to share data or data mining help these predators to target people better? Do they get lists of people with certain amounts of assets or types of? I'm curious, how do people know who to call? I imagine it's not random digit dialing.
Well, right? According to law enforcement, I think there's a good percentage of it that is phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. And it's a matter of dialing numbers randomly and see, you know, if you find somebody, if somebody nibbles. One thing with seniors, if they're at home and if the kids aren't calling and the grandkids aren't calling, and now you have somebody who's calling and who professes to have interest in you, and if that caller really minds it well, they can get that elder convinced that, hey, I'm your new best friend. And the elder's thinking, you know, the kids don't call me as often as this person does. And I think that makes the elder much more susceptible to the pitch and being taken. Also, once somebody falls prey to a scam, I am told that there are lists that go out amongst con artists, and they're nicknamed sucker lists, because, you know, just like a legitimate business might sell its list of customers to another legitimate business on the theory that, well, this person ordered items from us, they may order items from you. My understanding is that the fraudsters think, okay, this person fell for this scam, it might fall for my scam. So another source of information is social media. People need to be very much aware of what they're putting out on social media, because they're not the only ones looking at the social media. And so when families start putting out the photos and the names of, you know, the grandkids and so on, and it's not that hard to get people's phone numbers off the internet, you know, the clever fraudster can put all of that together and act as though they know a member of the family, or try to impersonate a member of the family. You know, it's the grandparent scam where, Grandma, that's your granddaughter. And Grandma's saying, Julie, is that you? And then they say, yeah, Grandma, I'm in Mexico, and I was in a car accident. Can you wire me $500? So there are variations on that scam. But a clever fraudster can figure out the buttons to push. And for a lot of elders and a lot of people who are not over 65, once that button is found.
And also, after they've been ripped off, they'll continue to get ripped off. There are studies that show that seniors who lose money, they're anxious to regain that money. Mm-hmm. And you might go back to the brain studies and realize that if they fall for it once, then they're on their way to continually
do it.
That
seems counterintuitive to me, but
right, right. No, because what do they learn? And again, when Sean was talking about the education piece, I think we need to take our resources and not try to educate the seniors, especially the ones that have been ripped off. More attention has to be, well, we can do a little bit, but we need to put much more resources into educating the children. The adult children, it's time for the adult children to have an adult conversation with the senior parents. Everything is not all right. Dad's 85. Oh, he's in great shape and he's talking and you visit him once or twice a month. You know, that's not enough. You have to get in, and it's time for seniors too to appreciate they are living a wonderful existence because they're alive. In the old days, you got sick, you were dead in 2 days. Average life expectancy, 1901, was 47. We're living a long time, and we have to adjust to that. So seniors need to have these conversations with their children and start to relinquish some of their power over their own assets. I mean it, to have control by way of the family controlling, because otherwise there's other people out there who are going to step forward, they're going to volunteer their services, and we're going to see very bad results.
Although you started the program by saying one of the categories is caregiver abuse.
One of them. And that's when the whole family has to get together to watch. Caregivers, what we mean with caregivers, yeah. A professional gets paid to take care of an individual who can't take care of their activities.
We're not talking about family members directly.
No, but they're part of the equation too. But, you know, it's time to wake up. seniors.
We have a raised eyebrow from Cheryl here.
we seniors need to get together and talk with our family about.
Do you want to respond
issues.
To that? I have to go to a station break, but I want to hear that response there.
Now?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Family can be the source of the ripoff. And oftentimes family members are the caregiver, and a caregiver is responsible whether or not they're getting paid to do the caregiving. So this is a very difficult conversation. You do not have a senior who typically wants to relinquish right over anything, and who would? But the senior really has to think, who do I trust? Who do I want to give that power of attorney to? And it may not necessarily be the kids. It may be somebody else. So they need to think about this. And don't assume that the kids are going to be the best source.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a struggle. And there's no one answer.
Yeah, exactly.
In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco. And on the web at KALW.org, I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight we're discussing senior elder financial fraud with our guests, Prescott Cole, senior attorney with CANNR, California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, Cheryl Poncini, deputy district attorney of Alameda County's Elder Protection Unit, and Shauna Reeves, director of elder abuse prevention at the Institute on Aging here in San Francisco. We invite you, our listeners, to call in with your questions or comments. Have you or has someone you know been the target of an attempted scam? Do you have questions about how to protect yourself or a senior you know from fraud? Call us at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment at the KALW website or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. So, Shauna Reeves, you mentioned the TrueLink study. One of the points in that study is that they came up with the annual estimate of upwards of $36 billion a year, the figure that we're working with at this point of how much seniors are defrauded from, which varies quite a bit from the previous benchmark that people were using of $3 billion a year. And that that was a MetLife Institute study. Tell us why the discrepancy there.
No expert on this research. I know that the MetLife study was based on newspaper reports, so things you were reading about in the newspaper about elder abuse. The TrueLink study used as its framework methodology created by the Stanford Fraud Research Group a number of years ago. I don't know. Again, this brings me back to my point that we need better research. We need major research, and we need it done by university, not by private entities. I really think that that we need that sooner rather than later so we can really get a handle on what we're looking at. A lot of what I hear is that most of the elder abuse is done by family members, and that's what some of the research is showing, and those are the calls that get made to Adult Protective Services. But that doesn't mean we really know what's going on. I also want to talk about a different type of kind of hybrid abuse. A lot of times the family members are working in partnership with a professional, and I don't want to leave that out of the mix. A senior, for instance, can't have a mortgage loan taken out on his home by an adult child without a professional being in on that. And so I also want to not just say it's all family and not just say it's all professional predators, but also think about the ways that they can interact together. I've also noticed that a lot of professional predators are going straight to the caregivers. This is a super alarming trend I've been watching, telling caregivers, usually family caregivers, get durable power of attorney for the elder, and then we will help you, say, reposition assets so that we can get your loved one onto something like Medi-Cal or Veterans Aid and Attendance. They're not even bothering with the senior themselves. They're actually working through the family caregiver. So as much as we say, go talk to your senior, seniors talk to your family members, I also want caregivers to know that they can also be targets for elder financial abuse, and they are being used as vectors. So that's something that I just want to put out
there. So you're saying in that case, you're saying unknowingly.
Yeah, unknowingly. Right. Yeah, a GAO report in 2010 came out looking at aid and attendance scams, which are scams that target veterans for their pensions by selling them annuities. And what they found is that a lot of those predators were dealing with the adult children to approach the elder.
Prescott, you wanted to add something there.
Right, because the motivation of the family is to protect the assets. And there's a lot of abuse that goes around these predators that are playing on the senior sphere, again, of going into institutions and telling them that there's government benefits out there. And the way to qualify for the government benefits is to move your assets around. So the children get involved. They want to save the house. They want to save the parents' assets. And they hear about, like, the government program to pay for long-term care, the Medi-Cal program. Well, if you move your assets into a Medi-Cal friendly annuity, or if you put your assets over to this, that, or something else. And then same thing with the veterans benefit. They call these benefits entitlements when, in fact, they're not entitlements. They're needs-based benefits. You can't get them if you have a high asset level. So they, with a wink and a nod, they're going to help you to move the assets. And their motivation is to charge fees for their services and or sell a high commission product. And then the family has no idea what goes on going in, and then they're stuck because if they get the benefits and then they find out they've done something wrong, then they could be held responsible. And like with the veterans benefit, if you wrongly get the benefit, you have to pay it back. And if you've impoverished yourself to get this by locking your assets up in irrevocable trusts or annuities, you can't get to your money and you've got a serious problem on your hands.
Wow. So do you have some thoughts, Prescott, about the differences in the numbers that we're seeing?
Shauna mentioned the MetLife, and that was an interesting study because what they did was they culled through all these newspaper articles about abuse. My first job out of college was a newspaper reporter, and I know how stories get in. And a story about grandma getting ripped off around Christmas time is a lot better than grandma getting ripped off in August. And so one of the findings of the MetLife study was, you know, elders are ripped off more during the holiday seasons. Well, no, that's what the editors like to put into newspapers. Also, what they did, remember, that's a commercial venture, MetLife. And if you look at all the examples they put up, the examples they highlighted were family members, caregivers. They didn't have one example of a commercial serial predator. And at the time, they were selling reverse mortgage, again, the reverse mortgage market, and selling insurance. So that was not part of the report. So you need better studies, just what Shauna said.
And we need to have some kind of national reporting base. We really don't have a national reporting base. States have their own. And again, as we talked about earlier in this program, each state has its own definition of who is an elder. And many states say 65, but other states say a different age. So we really have to have more consistency. I'm going to throw another factor into the mix, and that is many times you don't just find financial fraud. Oftentimes you find financial financial abuse of elders coupled with another form of abuse. So there are other forms of abuse of elders, including physical abuse, physical neglect, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. And oftentimes you will find a combination of those. So one of the things when I teach at the Oakland Police Department Academy that I emphasize is you get called on one issue, but keep your eyes and mind open. There may be other issues involved.
So give us a sense of a couple of other scams. So you talked about the grandparent scam. Give us some other examples here, Cheryl, just so that we have a sense of kind of what's out there. Some of it for consciousness raising, and you know.
And that's what the public outreach I do is. It's consciousness raising. There are so many, and so I don't want the listeners to think that if I only mention a handful, that those are the only frauds, because there are so many variations on the theme and others that I won't even get to during this program. But, for example, during the tax season and during other times, there's the IRS scam that can impact not only seniors but people of all ages, where a caller claims to be the IRS and that you owe X amount of dollars.
I got that call last week, by the way.
And it was not from the IRS, I'm certain, because they don't call.
But should I have called the IRS to tell them? There was a phone number attached to it.
I would not use a phone number that a potential crook has emailed you or sent you or called you about. I would look up the local number for the IRS. They have an office I know in Oakland, probably one in San Francisco, and I would call them and talk with them. So I would not use any phone number that you get that is unsolicited by you, by somebody claiming to be you know, the Bank of America, and they need your personal information. By the way, no bank that you were already a client of is going to ask you for your social security number or mother's maiden name unless you have generated the call to a legitimate number.
So if they say they're calling you and they want to verify your identity, that doesn't make any sense.
No, that does not. Hang up the phone forthwith. Another type of scam is Medicare open enrollment, where somebody calls an elder claiming to be working for Medicare, and they just want to verify information, such as your Social Security number. That's a fraud. During the holidays or when there are natural disasters, and the number of charities just spring up, it's like rabbits giving birth. And so many times the so-called charities are just fronts for people who are trying to just get money any way they can. We saw that with Katrina many years ago. So charities, there are some wonderful charities out there, legitimate charities that are worth donating our time and money to. But my suggestion is check them out on charitynavigator.org and think twice before you start donating money or giving money to anyone you don't know. And sometimes even to people you do know, think twice about that. You never want to leave your personal sensitive information out and about, even in your own home. And that means bank statements, credit card statements, your Social Security number, your insurance explanation of benefit statements, because you never know who's going to come over. It could be a friend. It could be your grandchild. It could be some guy claiming to work for the city and needing to check your water pipes. By the way, don't let that person in the house until you've checked that out with the city. So you want to make sure you put things away. And when you are ready to get rid of documents that are sensitive, don't just throw them in the trash, because there are folks out there who will dumpster dive to get your personal information. So you want to get a cross-cut shredder and shred that into fine bits of confetti. Prescription drug fraud happens, especially with seniors. You know, a lot of seniors are on a fixed income. And as a result, they're looking for, you know, good deals. And you might get contacted by somebody claiming to sell prescription drugs, but it's going to come from Canada or from some other country. Well, these drugs are not going to have been, will not have been FDA approved. You don't know how or where they were actually made. They may have been made in a third world country and shipped to another country such as Canada and then mailed into the U.S. So when in doubt, contact the Food and Drug Administration. They have an office in Alameda. And of course, I'm speaking for Alameda County, but I'm sure if you look that up on the internet, you would find a local office in whatever area you're at. Medical frauds can happen where people basically have ads saying, you know, for X kind of procedure or X kind of dental procedure, you'll be charged Y dollars. And then once the person comes in, and elders are especially susceptible to this, then it turns out to be a much bigger job and there's more money.
They get upsold, so to speak.
Upsold, yes. And that's a good way of putting it. And we had a situation like that in Alameda County, and the individual had... She was living in senior housing. The counselor called me. I referred them to our consumer fraud division. And our consumer fraud division was able to investigate that. And ultimately, the dental practitioner had to reimburse this elder for the money over and above what the initial cost was said to be.
Just one or two more.
Sure. Let's see. Caregiver, we've talked about caregivers. You need to be aware that if you give people the right to sign your checks, you need to really keep tabs on that. And if you're not able to, have a second person, because it's too easy for people who get access to your checking account to rip off checks and start defrauding you by writing checks to themselves or to a friend. So you really need to keep tabs on that. You need to check your bank statements, your bill statements, and your explanation of insurance statements. Even if Medicare is paying everything and your supplemental is paying everything, you want to double-check everything to make sure there's no mistake and there isn't fraud.
This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and there we were listening to Cheryl Poncini, Deputy District Attorney of Alameda County's Elder Protection Unit. And earlier we heard from Prescott Cole, Senior Attorney with the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, and Shauna Reeves, Director of Elder Abuse Prevention at the Institute on Aging here in San Francisco. We invite you, our listeners, to dial in with questions or comments for our guests. 415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. So, Cheryl, thanks for that overview of a lot of different schemes and scams. It sounds like there's a lot more there than we could even get to. I imagine there's many email-based scams, right? The charm prince of some, you know, country or the other. But what was really interesting to me in hearing about your warnings was, well, be careful about that. And it sounds like it makes sense now, but when you're in the moment and you're the tactics that are, you know, fine-tuned are being used and you have the elder brain that doesn't necessarily pick up on those cues, that all of that logic goes out the window, right? That's the first thing that I thought. The second thing that I thought was, you said, well, if you're concerned, check this or check that. And that sounds like a lot for people to do in general, and seniors perhaps even more so, who may not be as computer literate, depending on their age, where they are in the age spectrum there. So that brings me back to you, Shauna Reeves. You said, let's stop putting attention on the elders and let's talk about the perpetrators and their tactics. How should our conversation be shifting, or how should our approach be shifting to really stop trying to buff up the elders here in terms of their awareness and their responsiveness and shift towards really addressing the tactics of the predators?
And I want to be clear, I think it can be both. I think we can teach people self-defense strategies and also go after the predators. I just don't want it to just be all about self-defense. So I'm hopeful. I mean, I'm calling you right now from the California District Attorneys Association's National Elder Abuse Symposium. This happens every year. We have an entire conference dedicated to prosecuting elder abuse in California, and people from around the country, and last year someone from Canada came. So people are starting to wake up and they're starting to respond. I think this is moving from being what was termed the silent epidemic to the epidemic that everyone wants to talk about. This month, Consumer Reports had as its cover story an elder financial abuse story, and embedded within that lots of tips for people and lots of stories you can share for awareness purposes and also to finally respond to this big issue. So I think regulation is key. We need tighter regulations on some of these practices. I'm thinking of a campaign right now to stop robocalls, or at least enable consumers to stop robocalls from getting to their phones. This one undertaken by Consumers Union. Right now you can block robocalls, which are a real way for scammers to get to you. If you have voice over IP, you can get a free product called Nomo Robo that will block those calls for you. But for folks with landlines who are largely elders, it's not as easy. So things like that. Again, beefing up DAs, looking at how police can better respond to these things, these scams, especially these scams where we can actually find the people who are perpetrating them. A lot of the stuff overseas is just, you know, just not going to get to them. But there are a lot of scams that are being done by people in the United States. So let's go after them. But also civil attorney is a huge part of the solution to this, in terms of going after those perpetrators that the DAs either don't have the resources to go after, or just don't have the it's a different ball game. And also, of course, Adult Protective Services is a key player. Every county in California has an Adult Protective Services that you can call if you suspect that an elder or dependent adult is being abused. And they work with law enforcement. They both cross-report to law enforcement cases of suspected abuse, and law enforcement also cross-reports to APS. So these are all ways that we can really respond to this epidemic that, again, I would like to no longer call the silent epidemic, because if I've noticed anything over the last 10 years doing this work, it's that people are really, really wanting to talk about this more and more and wanting to put a stop to it.
Well, that's kind of hope for the future. But the reality is today there are very few civil litigators that actually do financial elder abuse cases. And the seniors need to know, and their family members need to know as well, that with civil litigation, Unless the matter is probably more than $50,000, civil litigator, really because of the costs and the time, really wouldn't be coming involved. And if it's probably more money than that and you have a perpetrator who is, you know, very capable, put it that way, they're gonna waste the money, hide the money. It's going to be very hard. And so it's difficult. And it's surprising, but we don't have a lot of civil litigators. Our organization has a lawyer referral service certified by the state bar, and we have some civil litigators do financial abuse. But you look at even San Francisco with the thousands of attorneys we have in the lawyer referral service that the state bar, or the San Francisco bar, they have, I think, a half dozen. And that's a lot for some of the counties, too. So there's not a lot of civil litigators. And then with law enforcement, we have some good law. But a lot of district attorneys really don't take on these kinds of cases, especially the complicated cases. They're time-consuming. They're very complicated. And in the end, you have to get 12 jurors to decide that what happened here was, you know, something that they can really understand when it's complicated. And they look at the seniors, and going back to what Shauna first said, you know, there's a lot of victimization. The victims themselves are held responsible. And, you know, there's a lot of confusion that goes on. So these aren't big cases for district attorneys. They're not taking them on. And if you look at the stats in San Francisco, you'd be astounded on how much they're not doing when compared to the thousands of reports that Adult Protective Services get in every county, San Francisco County. And they're just not pursuing these cases. And our state attorney general, the same thing.
And I have to disagree with Prescott. In Alameda County, we have an elder protection unit. And if our unit cannot take a case because they're jammed with cases, we have branch offices, and we have very good deputy DAs who can also prosecute the cases.
And how many are done a year?
And we had over 400 cases that have been charged to date this year, many of which are fraud cases. We do take fraud cases. We do take complex fraud cases. In addition, our consumer fraud unit, as I mentioned earlier, has subdivisions within it, including real estate fraud. They handle very complex real estate fraud cases. And we have annuities fraud, which is handled by one of our elder protection attorneys. We work closely with the California Department of Insurance with those cases. In fact, two of their people were speakers at a cross-training I organized this last October that Shauna, I believe, attended. So a comment, Jonathan, that you had made about what do we tell seniors? Well, one thing I would suggest to seniors is do not act in haste. Do not act in haste. When somebody's trying to put pressure on you to give them money, whether it's your friend, your relative, a stranger, or some professional out there, don't act in haste. Think about it. I use that old saw from years ago, you know, the carpenter and the seamstress would use of measure twice, cut once, so you don't ruin the product. Well, I would say think twice about your finances and then think again before you spend any money. Another thing I see in this that reminds me of the early years when we were prosecuting child molest cases over 20 years ago, where the molester would tell the child, "This is our little secret. Don't tell anyone." We see that done by these days in elder cases where the crook is telling the senior, "Don't tell anyone. This is our secret." Well, you tell everyone that you can think of. One of the things I tell people is that to end abuse, you need to report abuse. Because if it's not reported, APS, Adult Protective Services, law enforcement, the DA's office is not going to know. And even when it's within the family, and perhaps especially when it's in the family, these things do not generally self-correct. Oftentimes you do need the intervention of a third party.
And I imagine there's lots of shame there, so people won't necessarily come forward. Like in so many other situations where there's a predator-victim situation where people are under-reporting. I want to get to a caller, though. Put out that phone number again if you want to join us in the last few minutes of the program here on City Visions 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. That number is 415-841-4134 as we discuss elder financial abuse. That's, again, 415-841-4134. Let's go to Iris from Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you very much for this program. As a senior, I really appreciate what you're discussing, and I seldom hear it discussed. My question, I don't exactly know how to put it, but if you want to, you know, if you've already made financial decisions that you're not quite sure of, and you want to get sort of a neutral party involved or an objective look at your just general financial situation, is there some kind of service that any of your guests know about where you can do that?
Thanks very much, Iris, for your call. I'm having puzzled looks by our in-studio guest. Shauna, can you help here?
The big problems, there aren't places elders can go for impartial financial advice that won't either charge them or be difficult to locate. But I do get asked this a lot, this question a lot. If you need an elder abuse attorney, you can call CAN or you can call the Bar Association, get a referral. But for elders who want financial advice, impartial financial advice, there isn't a referral service. I would, though, recommend the Department of Business Oversight's Seniors Against Investment Fraud website. There's a checklist there that you can use when you're scoping out financial advisors, so you can get their license numbers, see what they're about, take that with you during your meeting with the financial advisor. And then also I would suggest shopping around, getting as many eyes on the contract as you can. But unfortunately, there isn't a central location you can go for that.
Shauna, can you tell us that website again, and we'll link it to our website?
Oh, sure. Department of Business Oversight runs the SAFE program, Seniors Against Investment Fraud, and I don't have the website off the
well,
top of my head.
We'll find it and put it and link it to our website.
One other suggestion for Iris, maybe if you have a certified public accountant who does your taxes or an enrolled agent, and if you trust that person, you might want to ask that person if they can suggest anyone. There are private fiduciaries out there. I would suggest that if you want to hire someone who's a private fiduciary, you do your homework. You check them out. You get some recommendations. You check on the recommendations because you're going to be sharing personal financial information with that person. So you want to feel comfortable that the person that you've selected is someone that you feel you can trust.
And I want, in the last few minutes of the program, Prescott, to go back to your point earlier that we need to bring in the children or the other family members of the elder that we're describing here. How do we get them more involved, not only in raising awareness, but what specific things should they be talking with their family member about, and what warning signs should they be looking for in terms of concerns that their family member may be particularly at risk here?
Right. There's some great lists online with some good red flags. You know, if there's people that have been around for a while, suddenly there's new friends in the family, there's long-lost relatives that show up. But you know, the kinds of things that I think we really need to do is to go deeper and to have the family sit around and really talk about what is the family's financial situation. You know, the seniors are reticent to talk about anything with finances. That's how they were raised. They didn't talk about finances probably with their family, of their parents. So they don't have that kind of vocabulary. They don't know what to do. But that's why the sandwich generations needs to step it up. They need to know if mom needs another $200-$400 a month. And if that's all she needs, and let's say mom's from the greatest generation, that means she had four kids, and some of the kids work, others might be able to pitch in a couple of bucks. What does mother need in order to stay in the home? And then start to get more information about what are their daily needs, and find out if there's anything that's changing within the home environment. Now, Cheryl, you probably have a lot of examples on that.
I'm also curious if there's other proxy organizations that could help here. So, for example, could a local senior center or a physician's practice, could they be part of raising awareness here?
If they were educated into asking questions about the seniors' financial situations, but they don't. There's been studies that show maybe 5 to 10% of the doctors will actually bring up financial situations with the seniors. And that's important. And when you talk about senior centers, unfortunately, a lot of them become venues for different kinds of predators. They have to have entertainment. They have to have things for the seniors to do. They invite educators in there, and some of these people are predators. So, and then when you talk about government benefits, the government workers aren't there to give you legal advice. And so that is something where seniors have to go to find out information, and that's what leads them to some of these dark alleys. And
so I want to ask, is there anything from a legislative standpoint that can be done to put in some more protections? Because it seems like everywhere you turn, there's a loophole that someone can get through.
Right.
Any thoughts there?
Yes. And some of the legislation, we've seen some good work done with insurance products that there's a suitability standard. There's some prohibitions on what the agents can do and can't do. And we need stronger, and that's what you need for every kind of product that's sold to seniors. One of the struggles is when you try to get legislation, the how we have laws that go through, and you have really good lobbyists working for industry, they'll stop your bills. So a lot of work has to be done, but through legislation, through education of the law enforcement, which is going on today, and making more resources available, it's staggering the amounts of money that goes for child abuse and almost nothing from the federal government to look at elder issues.
Right. And I was going to follow up on that point that you made earlier to Cheryl's, disagreement, though. But what could make prosecuting these types of cases even easier?
Well, I don't know that they're ever going to be easy to prosecute. And there is nothing that is a slam dunk in criminal law. I think that if we had more resources, such as if we had larger budgets and we could hire more qualified attorneys, that would be great. If cities were able to hire more law enforcement and up the training, that would be helpful. Recently, the Board of Supervisors increased the funding for our Alameda County Adult Protective Services so they could hire more workers, which means that there's more cross reports that are being taken. So that's very, very important. I think that we need to realize that seniors need to, be protected. And the only way that that's going to happen is to make seniors and their families and the community generally aware of this process and to let people know it's okay to discuss this. I do encounter some seniors who don't want to hear this. It's as though, the three monkeys, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Therefore, evil must not exist. Well, unfortunately, it does. And I do disagree. Senior centers can be a wonderful source of information. But like anything else in society, somebody who wants to victimize people can find a way in. So we all have to be aware of that.
So there's no magic
solution. There's no magic wand.
Well, yeah. We can get a good law for a criminal undue influence. We don't have that. We had that in civil law, and that started to move. But if you have that, that would go a long way to aiding in prosecution.
What does that mean? Quickly.
Undue influence, that somebody's taking advantage of somebody else's weakness. It's and we have no criminal definition for that, so the prosecutors can't use that. More tools have to happen.
Okay. And Shauna Reeves, I want to give you the last word. Anything you would add to this conversation of directions we should be going to help get the word out or to prevent these scams from getting to the people that are most vulnerable?
Sure. I would say we do have a long way to go. And when I was speaking earlier about things that are happening, it's surely not enough. It's not commensurate with what we need in terms of resources, in terms of education. But I think that we are on a positive, we're on the right trajectory right now. And I think that if we keep up the pressure and we keep telling people we need to take this seriously, including law enforcement, I think we're going to get there. Also, this area of law is super complex compared to other areas of law, and I think we need to understand that and realize that the funding needs to keep up with that as well.
So there's no shame in talking about this issue, and more families should be talking about it more openly, it sounds like. That's City Visions for this evening. My guests were Prescott Cole, senior attorney with the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, Cheryl Poncini, Deputy District Attorney of Alameda County's Elder Protection Unit, and Shauna Reeves, Director of Elder Abuse Prevention at the Institute on Aging here in San Francisco. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For a link listening to this and other City Vision shows to let us know what you thought about tonight's program. To subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Ann Harper. Join guest host Raja Shah next Monday as we debate the impact of Prop 47, which reclassified certain felonies to misdemeanors. Has it helped or hurt? Tune in next week to find out. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.